Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Beer Zandt, Head of Partnerships at RocketX, and welcome to another edition of The X Collective. The X Collective is a recurring series of interviews with founders, VCs, and influencers in the field regarding the European tech and start and scale-up ecosystem. Today, I'm privileged to have with me Elon and René. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Cool that you're here. Today's subject is all about raising Series A and beyond. Arguably the most critical funding round in the whole fundraising journey that founders experience. And I think what's beautiful on the team composition that we have today is that Elon hails from an investment background, and René, CEO of Lepaya, has very practical insights and hands-on experience in fundraising and has just recently gone through a Series A fundraise. Let me start with a quick round of introductions. René, pleasure to have you here, founder of and CEO of Lepaya, previously with Boston Consultancy Group and a former exec at Lazada in Southeast Asia, a whole different ballgame.
Different game.
And since a couple of years operating with Lepaya, could you elaborate a bit on your background, specifically the role and what your mission is with Lepaya?
Yeah, so my role, I'm one of the founders of Lepaya, and I'm still responsible for everything outward facing, marketing, sales, investors typically, and many of the learning content pieces that we offer. What our mission is actually very simple. We see a massive need in the market for upskilling. How do we make sure that employees in the broad sense are ready for the skills that are going to be required for them in 5 to 10 years from now? And we help corporates and HR departments to put those skills into action in an impactful, measurable way. In simple terms, we ensure that people still have their jobs in 5 years from now and that companies remain competitive.
Couldn't be more relevant. Thank you very much. Then Elon, you're an investment manager at Endite Capital, one of the most renowned investors in the Netherlands. You're a board member at incredible scale-ups like 3D Hubs and Virtua Gym. Yep. What is it that drives you every day and gets you out of bed?
Well, for me, it is basically creating together with those companies, basically the scaling phase, and that you see that they're entering new countries, hiring a lot of people, and creating awesome products to delight their customers. I think this whole combination, this whole journey with the ups and downs, that's what I really like. But seeing the end goal later on, where you create a lot of jobs, people get really educated in the newest things out there, right? Because they work at these really cool companies.
Yeah.
That makes me really excited.
I can imagine. Yeah, sounds like a beautiful job.
Yeah, it's fun.
Cool,
it's fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. Hey, before we go into depth, I would like to challenge you with three statements to see what are your opinions and are they conflicting or not. So let's go through them one by one before we go into depth. First of all, the first statement is... you see a lot of buzz around SaaS and recurring revenues, and increasingly it seems like everybody's moving towards subscription-based revenue. My statement here is investors are obsessed with SaaS and recurring revenues for the right reasons.
Well, I always start by saying clients don't like SaaS. Clients like a great product that make great impact. And SaaS is a business model. I understand from an investor point of view that predictability in revenues and hence predictability in income and costs and hence cash flow is an important topic. But I think too often great products too early on get pushed towards, can you SaaSify the model? Because then your Excel model gets more predictable. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, hey, you have great client traction. How can we build that out? And we take the effort to fully understand your business model and hence invest in a great product, great company.
And Elon, what about you?
Yeah, well, if you look at the funds we have, so we have three funds. First fund, maybe, let's say, SaaS wasn't yet huge, so we didn't have a lot of SaaS investments. If you look at fund two, already, let's say, I think 3/4 of the companies we invested in had SaaS business models, and we just launched a third fund, and there we also heavily going to invest in SaaS businesses. A few of the reasons is indeed predictability. It's easier to digest for analyzation, and also what we've seen during the Corona days, that those type of models were quite sticky with customers. So you saw less revenue decline or actually still a lot of increases in the portfolio companies. And with some transactional based type of models,
of course,
you saw some declines depending which sector we're in. So I think also you see it in the public stock market as well. that those got premiums, those SaaS type of models.
They're more resilient in a downturn, for that matter. Then the next statement is that a network, having and building out diligently your network in investors, is imperative in being successful in your fundraise.
Yeah, for sure. I think network starts at so many different levels within your company, right? Also hiring the right people. Maybe those people have the right networks as well, right? Mm-hmm. It could be your mentors or the first investors you're getting in. Maybe those have great networks as well. So it's not only surrounding the CEO, but also the people that they have nearby that maybe can introduce them later to the right investors, because there's a lot of signaling effect in the market. So if those early stage investors invested, so maybe those later stage investors deem them highly because of their sector expertise and so on. So it's really key having the right network so they can make later on the appropriate introductions.
Okay, clear.
I couldn't agree more. If I'm speaking in general to my team, whether it's on senior level or on more junior level, it's very often about what have you been doing next to your day-to-day requirements, i.e. who have you been speaking to get more insights, more expertise, more input. And that's equally relevant on an investor, from an investor point of view. Making those relationships early and getting intros at the right levels is clear. Necessary to get it done.
It sounds logical, but at the same time, it also creates a barrier to entry for people who maybe have a super product background, know what they want to build, but have no clue on how to get it funded.
Yeah, 100% agree. So I'm not saying it's a great thing. So you really get relationships are as important as the quality of what you offer. I do think today it's the case. So if you are a founder wanting to raise significant money or wanting to run rounds, you need to start investing in the right connections early on.
Clear. And then the third statement, I think this is interesting. Fundraising is purely a sales process. Elon, what would you say?
Yeah, definitely it is. For sure. It's also a bit of market and demand type of dynamics, right? And you need to create scarcity. But a process for funding takes a lot of time. Like whether see this inside sales type of job, you need to get to know the few of the key persons within an organization, needs to get them all excited, right? There's a bit of politics happening in partnerships at funds. So you try to get them all excited, not only the lead partner. And you need to create a bond because you're going to work together for a long time with those portfolio companies, right?
Yeah, and I think there's one more. So one is about, in sales terms, managing the DMU, which is not only the one who signs the contract, but also the ones around it. I think the second thing is look at it from a numbers game as well. So like if you want to close one deal, you're going to calculate backwards. How many reach-outs do you need to do? How many first pitch? How many second pitches? For me, the same is for funding processes. So the people that have done it right really started from 50, maybe 70 kind of potential leads and drove it down to a handful of term sheets and hopefully one great
deal. I see. So more analytical, procedural perspective on fundraising.
Take the process view.
Less art, more of a science.
Both. Art and science, like many things in life. But don't forget the science part. It's not only about that great bond and that great check. You see, if you just read kind of articles about it, it's also just about really putting in the hard work and managing the process effectively.
Clear. Thank you very much. Then a lot has changed in the fundraising landscape, if you will, over the last couple of, well, let's say 12 to 18 months, if it was only due to COVID. What would you say are the imminent sort of threats and opportunities that have arisen due to whatever happened with COVID?
Yeah, so I think there are a few different stages, right, of the pandemic and how it played out also in investment landscape. So in the beginning, you saw definitely that SaaS models were, let's say, in high demand because they showed less declines in revenue. But if you look over the last past of months, there you actually see it's balancing out again. E-commerce type of models are also doing well. Also, obviously, the e-commerce models in the right sectors in the beginning of COVID, right? But you see it's getting back to normal in that sense. But what you do see changing is that especially for, let's say, C rounds and D rounds, those are getting massive. You haven't seen that for a long time. Those big rounds in Europe happening.
Extraordinary.
So you see that a lot of money is hoarding up in the great companies and they attract a lot of the money. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of investors are ditching more, let's say, the C or B type of companies, not in series, but in quality. So you're seeing more and more money going to the great companies, I believe, yeah. and less money at the later stages.
So you're saying it's becoming more skewed towards the companies that are essentially AAA, have a yeah. great founding team.
And there you see the valuations obviously also increasing. And it will also reflect on the other side that the B or C type of quality companies are mm-hmm. getting perhaps lower valuations.
Yeah, okay.
And especially, obviously, for the sectors that are still, let's say, flaky for investors in terms of COVID, right? What's happening in certain sectors is still unclear.
Yeah.
Then investors probably don't pay premium there.
I see. And Rene, you've recently went through this fundraising process, I believe, in the COVID era.
Fully correct.
How was it, that experience? And what are things that you can share with the audience who are looking to fundraise?
So I think what Elon is saying is fully correct, especially during the COVID crisis. And still now, you see people taking a more cautious stance on kind of deals. Hence, the great deals are getting bigger and they're maybe slightly more uncertain, whether they're great or not, I think we don't know yet. They have more trouble raising money. I think what is very important from a founder perspective is to fully be very clear on what value you're bringing to your end clients and be able to articulate that super well mm-hmm. and then stay away from business model, from current financials, but what's the value you're bringing and how is that likely to be projected, have a firm belief in that, because that's what you need to convince potential investors of, that value is there, and they will never know your industry as well as you do. Mm-hmm. So you need to fully convince that. I do believe at this point in time, the hurdle is still a bit higher to kind of raise, especially around series, maybe late seed or series A or small Bs, that kind of stage where you're beyond the initial product market fit, but want to scale up. Yeah. Ideally, people are always asking for more proof points than you probably can find. So my key learnings are back to what I said before. It's about volume. Find that range of investors that are potentially there and find the right fit. Second question is also, of course, valuation might not matter that much in the long run. Having cash flow today is what we very much focused on. How can we raise a large amount of cash? Because obviously you also don't know how long a crisis will last. So you want to be able to ride it out and you can get maybe a little bit less at a mm-hmm. great valuation or more money in the bank at a slightly higher valuation. Sorry, a little bit less at a medium valuation. Or yeah. Focus on cash. In the end, cash is king and there's still a lot of cash in the market. So it's a matter of making the right deal at the right time.
So should it be a focus of founders to raise as much as you can, as early as you can?
Yes and no. I mean, having money in the bank in a crisis is a great asset. So from that perspective, yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's also the rational consideration. At what point do you need it? But one of the things we have done is go for slightly longer runways. So really try to raise for 24 months. And if you're doing well, go again in for those 24 months, even if you might still have a 12 or 15 month runway in the bank.
So a more defensive approach.
A little bit.
You both refer to mega rounds. It's exceptional, the amounts that you see coming by. And I think you made a fair point that it's directed towards, you know, the triple A rated companies that have high potential to succeed and also provide a successful exit to investors. But what would you say are the risks regarding those astronomical valuations? Because the benefits seem to be obvious, but I reckon it also has potential risks that it brings along, right?
Well, for those specific companies, the risk that they won't materialize their projections, right? And then you have a high valuation and try to refinance it. So it could be perhaps a down round. So then you get a difficult territory, right? But the other risk is not so far for that company, but for, let's say, the number two or three player in the market that don't get those heavy, let's say, funding rounds, that mm-hmm. They are getting in a squeeze. And that could be more troubling for them.
I see. So it's becoming less accessible for companies that are second, third tier, because all the money is directed towards premium companies.
Yeah.
And therefore, the perceived chance of them to succeed diminishes.
Yeah, to get a number one position in the market,
I
right?
See. Yeah. I see. Okay. Does it happen frequently that companies do not end up not reaching their ambitions and having to, you know, do a down round and then coming into a sort of vicious cycle?
We haven't seen it so far in our portfolio, luckily, so that's good. But sometimes you see deals on the market and you think, why this valuation, right? And
exactly.
I'm just puzzled sometimes seeing those where there's almost no relation with revenue. So there, you know, they... the investors and obviously the founders need to make sure that they can really grow into that valuation over 18 months time. Otherwise, they'll have trouble raising a big up round.
Yeah. Okay, clear. And I think another thing that we've witnessed, at least due to Corona, is the entrance of international players into the European landscape, which, in my opinion, can only increase competitiveness and is a good thing for entrepreneurs. Do you also consider that to be?
Yes, but I think in general it was also a requirement for the Dutch market.
Mm-hmm.
I think early stage it's fairly possible to reach raise money in the Dutch market, but especially around the Series A, which we're discussing, there's relatively low amount of players available that really focus on that speed spot if you compare it to more Anglo-Saxon markets. So those players coming in also just for me literally filling a gap of that is not being filled by the Dutch players.
Yeah.
So I think it's great.
And as a let's say domestic Dutch investor,
I think there is more than enough capital for good companies for A and early B rounds. But if you want to go for the really big B or C rounds, there indeed you have to look also abroad. But you see already some funds already active for many, many years in the Dutch ecosystem, like Insight is a good example,
mm-hmm.
and a few others as well. But they rarely do deals here, right? Maybe one or two over 5 years' time,
yeah.
Or index, right? But it's good that you see more and more, let's say, foreign funds, like for the large rounds, helping out here for sure.
Cool. And then one more thing, because what also struck me is the rapid emergence of alternative forms of capital. So there is a huge hype now around venture debt, with players like CapChase or ClearBank, for that matter, coming into continental Europe, but also platforms like Pipe that offer subscription revenue trading, basically taking them off the balance and pre-financing the acquisition of new customers. What is your perception on those developments, and would you deem it relevant for you to consider within LaPaya, for example?
So simple answer, yes. I think a general broader ability to raise money is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to be very aware of what you're raising and basically what you're getting into. Like Elon was saying, getting in bed with an investor is a marriage, so you're stuck for the long run. If you do something on a venture debt level, it's the same logic. At some point, you need to pay it back, and there's multiples there. So be very aware what the impact is on your long-term cash flow versus the impact on your short-term cap table. For me, it depends on the type of company you have. And if I'm practically looking at LaPaya, we are a fairly high margin business,
mm-hmm.
meaning that if we grow, more cash flow gets available. So for us, kind of depth models
would
are
work.
Clearly more attractive than if I go to my past. We're running at a 0% gross margin,
exactly.
And we're really just funding growth from investor money, and it would not make a lot of sense.
I see. And what are complexities that you see? First of all, do you tend to leverage these kinds of instruments? And
for sure. I was trying to also stimulate it with the Dutch banks in the ecosystem many, many years ago. So I was pointing out that venture debt will going to be big, and they need to step up their game. Otherwise, the UK banks will go, eat their lunch.
More optimistic.
And that's basically what's happening in the Dutch ecosystem. So you see a few of the venture debt parties being very active. We work with them as well, but not only in the Netherlands, but also throughout Europe. But we always have, let's say, a true belief that we don't want to stress out the founders. We don't want to be stressed out ourselves whether we can pay back those interest mm-hmm. and principal debt payments, right? So we really want to have a great balance of enough equity or cash in the portfolio companies.
Yep.
And we're also proud to say that none of our portfolio companies so far throughout from 2006 and onward never went bust because of those type of issues.
Cool.
So we always finance in the proper ways with enough cash and not too much debt.
So it's useful, but you need to be very diligent.
Yeah.
It
needs to be for the right stage, right? So for example, if you really gonna invest a lot in product or certain countries and it doesn't really materialize fast in revenue, I'm not sure that venture debt is the right instrument. There needs to be already high cash conversion to pay it back maybe 6 months or 12 months time. So need to be visibility if you use that money, whether it will translate back into cash pretty
soon. I see. So translating into simple words, basically use equity to build the team, build the product, and let's say to find product market fit. And then you could leverage venture debt to fund your growth if you operate on a healthy margin.
Yeah, but always what we see together with equity, right? So if we just finance the B round or A round,
mm-hmm.
Venture debt firms love to then tag along, right? Because you've done the due diligence.
Exactly.
They already work for you for other deals, so they kind of know you, that you're reputable, and then they also chip in a bit. And it's really helpful not to dilute too much for founders then.
Cool. Perfect. Then, you know, this fundraising journey is quite a juggle, and the dynamics across different funding stages vary greatly from angel to C to Series A and beyond.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Jens, enlighten us. Like, René, you've just been through this cycle from, you know, pre-seed, seed onwards to Series A. Elon, you tend to invest late A and beyond.
Yeah.
Could you shed some light on what the different dynamics are along this fundraising cycle, if you will?
Yeah, let me start and then you can, of course, add. I would say from angel or seed is in the end all about the idea and your blue or brown eyes that you're going to make it happen. Yeah. So it's for me less about projections, less about the future, more about you as a person or as a founding team, and about, in general, the market and the player you're going to operating with. You also want investors that understand that. Mm-hmm. So the ones that at that point are asking for 5 year out, month by month, detailed financial models, for me, are not the right ones to engage at that point in time, because Excel is very patient. You need to believe in the idea, the vision, and the ability to pivot quickly, and that people need to buy into. And I think you have a lot of great people at this point in Holland that really understand that stage well.
Yeah.
For me, a Series A is very much about you have proven your product market fit, and it's about finding the right partners to actually start and build that scalable kind of cash machine, potentially putting your feet in the water internationally, tweaking the product a little bit further, and all of that.
The transition from startup to scale-up.
There's different definitions of scale-up, what for me important there is you get a different type of investor on board. You're ideally going to pivot a little bit less, but you're still going to be trying a whole lot of new ideas. So you want to get investors on board that kind of believe in that logic. I still am a big believer of you're still very much in entrepreneurial stage. You have data points, but they're not conclusive yet. So still try to have your debate on kind of the team level, the traction level you have so far, but mostly what got you that traction, a little bit less than the statistics on that traction. Because that means if something goes wrong and something will go wrong, it's about we can solve that together. And that brings me, I guess, to my last point. There's some initial proof, but not full proof. So it still should be about, do we like each other and can we work things out? Things are always great if things go well. The real test of the relationship is when things don't go well. So that's the feeling you need to have. And then for me, it gets a bit to, are you in the sweet spot of that firm? And many investors have told me, we do a bit from C to Series C. Sure, they probably do. But what is kind of 80% of your rounds? If you're the one person which is very early stage, you're probably going to ask for too many proof points. Yeah. But if you're too big a fish in a small pond, there's going to be a lot of focus on you, because if you don't materialize, a whole fund gets into trouble. So I think you also want to hit the sweet spot of your investor so you really can grow together and they can again help you with the next rounds, because it's also logical for them.
Perfect. Yeah. I think that's a very solid piece of advice to really understand what is the specialization of this investor and is this firm capable of understanding my current situation, understanding my pain points and the things I'm going through, and the complexity that comes with a certain stage.
Very much.
Instead of going for the name.
Very much, even though name will definitely help you on talent attraction side. So take that as a practical plus into consideration. Obviously, you often get the question, should you consider just the money or the term sheet of investors and what value add can they bring?
Yep.
I'm always a bit in between. Of course, the world people will try to sell value add, but in the end, it's also just money that's being put in. I think hiring a great network is definitely a plus. That can just the networking point we discussed earlier. Investors can play a key role in that, especially the ones with a great brand name. So that's important for me. But secondly, how things work operationally, I would always recommend call up a couple of founders from the portfolio. Ask, what was a really bad board meeting you had because you really were off plan, and what happened then? Yeah. Were we problem solving together, or did you usually get a lot of nasty questions and then a comment, go fix it?
Because that's
probably not the investor you want to be in bed with.
Another, I think, very practical point of advice is to really look for proof points with other portfolio companies and ask them for difficult situations.
Call them up.
That explains the most, probably.
I'm 100% convinced that 80% of the founders will pick up the phone if you're a founder and you send a message and say, can I pick your brain for 15 minutes? On the investor you have, what's good, what's bad, they will give you a pretty honest answer.
Yeah, I agree. Everybody's open to do that, to share those experiences. And Elon, then moving on from that stage, what is the change in dynamics that you see Series A onwards from an investor point of view and also from the founder's point of view, if you will.
Yeah, so normally the later stage you get typically less new investors will get into the cap table. So at seed stage you have a lot of angels and so on, maybe a VC also. But the later you get in the States, typically you see less new investors being added to the cap table. So that's one big difference. So, and also in terms of information you have to provide, the more later stage you are, the more historical data you have of your company, right? To also build your forecast models for later on. So the amount of information you have to provide, the more later stage you get is more, all right? And we typically do like to ask for 3-year or 4-year forecast because we invest, let's say, late series A, B, and C rounds.
Becoming more predictable.
Yeah.
More so analytical.
Yeah. And also, we like to have obviously good conversations, right? Why going to this country? Why scaling there? To get to together, make the plans so that we're all kind of aligned and based a bit on data and obviously good input of the founders, why they want to make a change if it's not really in the data. There, right? So that's one of the biggest difference. I think also the level of professionalism of all the parties involved around it. So you get more professional law firms, or maybe you need to have an accountant to really do deep dive on your books, whether it's solid or not. So those type of things are also stepping up a bit.
Yeah.
So those things you have to consider.
And is the process also taking longer?
Not necessarily. It really depends how well you organize beforehand, how good your people are in your team to help you prepare it. So if you have a solid team and maybe they already have everything well written down or good process or systems in place to get it easily out of the systems, then you can have faster data room filter, make faster your models.
Yeah.
Just to give you an example, one of the companies we recently sold beginning of this year, they had a great CFO and he was really on top of the systems, the information. And then a few strategic firms knocked on the door. It wasn't at all a sales process, but like in a month time, 3 strategic firms knocked on the door. So we made it to a sales process, although it wasn't the idea to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But since already the information was solid to begin with out of the systems and the CFO was amazing, we could really fast start this sales process.
Cool.
And the same thing you can do obviously also with fundraising.
Nice. So having the information ready at hand is imperative, similar like you would do in a sales process then probably.
Yeah, I think it's important to basically, once you're raising your series X, mm-hmm. figure out what you need for X plus one, and that you're going to be raising towards. So just very simple in terms of financial model, how much do you want to raise? Well, enough to bridge it to the next round.
Mm-hmm.
But I fully agree with Ilan is saying, also on your internal processes and structures, the moment you've raised is the best moment to really fundamentally invest in your internal finance, legal, whatever capabilities, and set it up for the future.
And how do you know exactly what you need in order to be eligible for a next round?
Well, exactly is a tough word, but
yeah.
in essence, ask. So basically, the network comes back. Make sure you have often enough, early enough conversations, which are also true, honest enough. What will be the ideal proof points you look for at a Series A and then at a Series B? And when you're raising a Series B, ideally the Series C you want to go for. And even though the range gets bigger, do your own due diligence on what you need. So you have your growth trajectory, you have cash. But if with that you can't, for instance, hit the internationalization proof points you mm-hmm. might need to hit in between an A and a C round somewhere, then you've probably raised the wrong round. So I fundamentally believe in the logic of scaling up.
Mm-hmm.
So the four steps, raise cash, set a strategy, then hire the right people with that and focus on execution. But you basically need to, in my opinion, look one circle ahead. So the moment you start raising cash, you basically need to figure out what you need to do with all that cash up until execution and to get to the next cash raising cycle. And that's in essence just a networking, talking.
Yeah, this is something you need to figure out because it's not that transparent. You sometimes see it mentioning on the website, we do up to this type of tickets and this type of minimum hurdle of revenue levels. But in reality, maybe it's a bit different, right? Because investors are opportunistic, so maybe they set the hurdle really low just to see all the deals, but they would never ever do those deals, right? Because it's not really their true sweet spot. So really ask the partners, right? What is really the comfortable level where you want to see revenue at? How much traction in growth year over year?
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you're wasting just each other's time, right? If you really try hard.
Like you mentioned, it's super hard to judge by the cover what it is exactly that is the investment criteria of a specific firm, but also to understand what is a true differentiator that this firm brings to you. because it really depends on individuals and also if you have a fit with the people behind it. How can you as a founder understand and learn what really sets an investor apart and whether it's a good fit for you?
Yeah, I think it takes a while to figure that out, right? Obviously, we can send decks how great we are, what we accomplish with our portfolio companies. But that's a starting point, I guess, right? You build a relationship over time, how the investor, how the entrepreneur interact with each other, right? Do they stick to their promises or not, or whatever they promise to each other? Also meet other team members within the firm, right, to get a better grasp of the full DNA. And you're not married always to one person within the firm. Normally, also how it works with us, we have a two-man band per portfolio company. But in the end, right, if we need to do an IPO for other company, for a certain company, we just ask other colleague who has a lot of experience with IPOs. Or if you want to go to the German market, then we ask a German colleague to help there. So also try to assess what other team members within the firm can do for you, because they can also be really instrumental for that. But in the end, I think reference checks are the most important thing. And we are happy to provide them, obviously.
I can imagine it's instrumental in building this trust. And René, your analytical brain, do you have a model to approach this, or is it similar to what Elon mentioned?
No, I fully agree with Elon's has, but I go back to the sales process, which is also very data-driven. So whether you use, I know firms using Pipedrive for this, you can use Excel for this, but really have your structure. Which firms, which are your contact people, what are their proof points? Can you underpin those proof points? If you go on Dealbook or Pitchbook or Crunchbase and the firm says, I do Series A, but you can't find any Series A deal for the past 5 years, it's not very likely to actually do it. So there's quite a bit of data in the market, whether it's through talking to people or finding it out yourself, and then feed that back to them. I'm all about the open conversation. Like in a first sales conversation, you might say, hey, I notice we are a bit expensive for you maybe. Shall we talk about price up front in this case, not to waste our time? I think you can do that with firms as well. If you're not sure they fit your stage or your profile or your type of company, bring it to the table. Going back to the first discussion we have, we are not a typical SaaS business. If I see only SaaS type deals, I can see on the website that they're open to all kinds of business models. I bring it up in the very first conversation. Yeah. Just again, not to waste each other's time a lot.
Yeah, so the qualification process is very important there. Hey, maybe to conclude, because you guys have tremendous amount of experience on both sides of the aisle, so as an investor and as a founder, what are some very practical tips to share with the audience, or maybe failures that you've seen people make that you want to prevent other people from making?
Yeah, for me, I think one of the most important things is be honest and transparent. Because if, let's say, investors get a weird stomach feeling, right, that they didn't deliver on the promises and didn't even learn from why they made those, why they didn't hit those targets, right? That can be a orange flag, let's put it that way.
Yeah,
and if they deliberately make the information better, and then we find out later, because normally we find out.
I reckon that's a red flag.
Yeah, that's kind of a red flag. So, and those kind of things are really no-goes, right?
I can imagine. So you need to be super upfront and transparent in communicating, and also making sure that you have a proactive stance in solving the problems that you encounter instead of waiting.
For example, they didn't hit, because normally we monitor sometimes companies for 2 years before we invest, right? Because they're not at the right stage. And normally they don't hit their plans. And that can happen, right? We're fine with it. But as long as they understand why they didn't hit the plans, what they're going to do to hit it the next time, or maybe adjust their forecast, so at least we're kind of getting to know them way earlier than we invested, and understand how they bit operate with their company, right? So if we don't feel they're in charge of the company, don't know really what's going on in the market or how they should steer the company, then probably it's not for us.
Yeah, clear.
So be transparent and to really understand also how we can help them later on, right? Even before we invested.
And with regards to, because at the very early beginning of this conversation, you mentioned that you need to build up a relationship with not only, let's say, the partner, but the entire firm, understanding the depth and breadth of how the firm works. Do you have any practical tips on how to do this and how to approach this?
Yeah, I think it really depends per firm if you need to get in touch with all of them, because sometimes partners can do deals by themselves without getting, let's say, approved from the other partners. Mm-hmm. So it really depends how it's structured there in vetoing or not. Mm-hmm. But if you feel that at one point you are far already in the process with a particular fund, you can ask for a management meeting. And normally also the fund, if they're good, they would ask also for a management meeting, right? So the other parties also get to know. But it's good to ask this at earlier than later stage, because it can be most times only positive, because probably the other parties get also excited because they finally get to know the face of the person, right?
Yeah.
And if you have great presenters, you know, that really helps to close the deal later on.
What makes the entire team at Endite jump their seats if a founder does something? What really makes you excited?
For us, it's really showing the passion for your customers, the problems you're solving, and that you're, according to us, really on top of the big picture of the company and zooming in into the details as well. If you can do it that really well, or we ask, hey, here you have X and Y line, X, can you write on certain criteria, right, on scaling systems, where every competitor is and what their roadmap looks like according to you over the next 12 months. And if they can do it like in a split second, then we feel, okay, he's in control. He knows the big picture. He knows the details about his company. Then we're really excited.
Cool. And then, René, from your perspective, what are some very practical, you know, tips or experiences that you have that you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, let me mention two things. One is the thing that we found out the hard way is, like, when you're going on a first date, you don't put all your great stuff and all your flaws on the table straight away. Eh? You're not going to lie. You're not going to say, I like chick flicks, and going to figure out on a fourth date that you don't like it. But like it's with an investor, present yourself in an optimal light and just figure out what are the key things an investor wants to know and present that. So I think we have been prone, coming from a consulting background maybe, but to sometimes oversharing or being very detailed, whereas we should much more have remained on a, where's the industry going, what problem are we solving, how do we fit into that, and what's our financial protection model. And then the nitty gritty, which every company has, which is not greatly optimized yet or it's challenging, park that for a later stage. So really figure out your initial story and clean it up. I think that's
so that will be covered in the due diligence phase then, or
The comments in the due diligence phase, or figure out what excites people, and don't get some of these things. Oh, but their operations are pretty hard. Yeah, they are, but it's fine. We deal with it. And test that with fellow founders up front, or with friendly people at investment firms you know, but really trial your story and figure out what are the key things you should share. Again, not hide stuff. I fully agree with you. It comes out anyway. But you don't need to put everything on the table up front straight away either.
You first need to make them excited.
Exactly. So that's for me quite important. I think this, so what not to do, I think what to do, very importantly, try and manage the process. If you want to manage, start with 50, 40, 60 firms at the same time, you should be in control of the process and not let other people determine the agenda. So build in stage gates. One of the things I've said before is there's no real incentive for an investor to say that they're not going to invest in you, because they're ideally going to wait for a couple of months, see more proof points, get more data in, to cut it off. And if you want to manage the sales process, you either want to go or no go at some point at different stages.
Yeah.
So I think it's very important for you to stay.
To create urgency also.
To create urgency, to also get no's, because you do need to go from 70 to 69 no's to get that one yes, and not drag too many firms along, because at some point you want to invest your time and focus on the few firms and the few answers that are likelihood to convert.
And do you start with the ideal investors from your perspective, or do you start with maybe the investors who you are less more uncertain about and want to test the waters?
I'm an optimist, so I always go in and test with everyone that works. But theoretically, of course, right? Practice your pitch a bit with your investor, which you think is not going to be top of your bill. Get the feedback and incorporate it. That's, of course, a very valid piece of advice.
Perfect, perfect. Gents, thank you so much for this inspiring talk. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. I hope you found it useful. If there is any questions that you have for either René or Ilan, please do get in touch. You can send us an email at RocketX, and we'll forward it to the gents. Thank you so much, and have a nice day.